Hello, everyone.
I can hear something now.
Did you get
Yay,
set
we
up
have
first?
sound.
Yes. Wanted to make sure everything was set up and the agenda was up before we get started, and make sure that everybody is here that is going to present this evening. If,
Marjorie,
yes.
I got an alert saying this meeting was canceled. I don't know why.
Probably an old one.
Okay. Yeah, because I have them all canceled for some reason, but I'm like, no, it's not canceled.
No, it's not. And especially, I just put out the empty bot for it.
Maybe I need a new refresher.
Probably. I wonder. We'll have to look into that. Okay, we have three presenters this evening. Justin Hurst, Roy
Mundelboim.
Mundelboim, and your first name?
Roy.
Roy.
Just let it slip off the tongue.
Yeah, Roy. Cool. And Andrew Dumke. Dumke.
I just want to say, can you hear me?
Yes.
I want to say thank you. You are the first person who's ever pronounced it right off the bat.
Dumkey?
Yeah, it's Dunky.
Oh, I try because my name's different also, like my whole life.
I gotcha.
Maiden name is Robinet, but it's spelled like Robinette. So
Oh, okay.
it's not ETTE, it's ET, where Angela is Robinette. But in French, you say Robinet. So yeah, I've had that too.
That's correct.
Even now, foray is furé. No, foray, not furé. It's okay. It's just a name, right? All right. So, Justin, are you here and ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Go right ahead.
Okay, share my screen. Can everyone see my screen?
I do.
Good.
Awesome.
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I need one of those for my computer.
All right, so let's begin. Hey everyone, first of all, my name is Justin Hurst. I'm going to be presenting today on Wi-Fi penetration testing. I'll be demonstrating methods of enumerating and hacking wireless security protocols. So let's go to this next slide. I'll be using a operating system called Kali Linux. Kali is a flavor of Linux that is open source. It's specifically used for penetration testing, security auditing, digital forensics. It's free to download and use. It's regularly updated and can run directly from a USB or a DVD without having to be installed. I have it installed on my system and I run it as a virtual machine right here on my Windows PC. I'll also be using this Wi-Fi adapter. It's called the Alpha Wi-Fi adapter. Let me move this. It is a USB connected Wi-Fi adapter. It's about 2 times the range of a standard Wi-Fi adapter. It's also faster than a built-in adapter that you might have in something like a laptop. It also features something called monitor mode. So it's able to capture wireless network traffic. It also has the ability to inject custom packets into wireless networks, which is what we will be doing. I want to point out that although this Wi-Fi adapter is legal to own and you can buy it on Amazon, that you must have express permission of a network owner to actually use it against the network. Otherwise, that's a crime. So for the purpose of this presentation, I created a wireless network, a temporary wireless network that I'm going to be utilizing this device against. So for the PowerPoint, let's hop in to the Kali Linux virtual machine. And I hope you can see this as well. Let me know, please.
Looks good.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so this is Kali Linux. It's a really cool tool to use. It has a lot of functions, has over 600 applications preloaded on it. Things for information gathering, vulnerability analysis, you know, password attacks, wireless attacks, which is what we're going to do, forensics, you know, exploitation, spoofing. It's very, very cool and very fun. So let me open up command prompt here. And I got this set up already. I have it in root, which is just giving us the permissions that we need to run these tasks. And then I'm going to check the interface configuration. So right now you see there's an Ethernet interface and there's a loopback interface. But what I want is a wireless interface. So I'm going to turn that on. And that's going to be called WLAN0. Now I can check ifconfig again. And there it is. The wireless interface is now up. Now I'm going to use a program that comes here on Kali called AirmonNG. It's actually a suite of tools. There's Airmon, there's Air Replay, there's AeroDump, AirCrack. I'm going to be using all of those tools in this demonstration. So now we are going to start that interface into monitor mode. Now that's on. We're going to use AeroDump, which I mentioned earlier, to actually look at what we're monitoring. So now you can start to see that we're picking up a lot of different access points, people's wireless networks in the local area. Here are all the names. Got some pretty good ones. Got some FBI van. We also got, you know, that one's unique, just Wi-Fi. Don't come up with anything better, I guess. Pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Cool. And then over here, you see the corresponding MAC address of each of these devices. We'll be using that later as well. You see things like the power the device is putting off, beacons that are being sent to that device from their client devices. Data here is the number of packets that have been captured so far. So you can see this device here is sending a lot of packets. This is the channel that it's on. You see a lot of 11, 6, 1. Here's another important thing, the encryption. So I think most of us commonly use WPA2 right now. So you see a lot of that. You also see someone looks like they're using WPA. It's outdated and very vulnerable. Recommend not doing that. This looks like an open SkyBell HD. That might be some sort of someone's video doorbell. So, you know, if you wanted to be mischievous, you might be able to connect to that and see someone's doorbell video. We're not going to do that because that's a crime. And then you see some, looks like someone's got WPA3, which is the newest and best that you can use right now. So if you're not using that, I think it might be a good idea to move towards that soon. And I'm going to show you why WPA2 might be a good thing to move away from. And then let's go ahead and stop that. I just hit Control C, so it stopped updating, so we can kind of see what we're looking at here. And right now, this access point pops out to me. So you'll notice that the name here doesn't really have a name. It shows a length, the number of characters in the Wi-Fi name. So that tells me that this person turned off the broadcast on their Wi-Fi, because people think that, you know, turn off the broadcast, people don't see your Wi-Fi, they can't connect to it. And while that's almost true, clearly we can see that this broadcast still exists. It's just not putting out the name of the access point. So on a normal Wi-Fi adapter, you wouldn't see this device, but because we have monitor mode, we can see that. So let's test that theory on if it's safe to, if, you know, simply not putting broadcasting your Wi-Fi name is a safe enough method of protection. So we are going to run this again. Zero dump G. Now we are going to put in the BSS ID of that device, which is just its MAC address. So what do we got here? Just copy that. And then I'm going to put MAC AC, which will be the channel that it's on. So where are we at? This looks like channel one, and then WLAN 0 is our interface. So we got to put that there. And let's run it. All right, so now we're using AeroDump again, but we're specifically looking at that one device. We can see again that its length is 13, but we don't know the name yet. You can see some beacons that are happening. And down here, we see another MAC address, a different one. So this is a device that is connected to that access point. We see that there's been some frames sent between. There's some ongoing frames right now. So we have this AeroDump running, and it is collecting this information. And we are going to try and get it to uncover that name right there, since we still don't know it. So we're going to do something called a deauthentication attack. Now, what this will do is it will deauthenticate this client from its wireless router and make it attempt to reauthenticate. And from there, we might be able to catch a Wi-Fi probe, which would reveal the name of the Wi-Fi network. So let's go ahead and try and do that. We're going to be using something called Air Replay, which is part of this suite. I can't spell it. And then we're going to give it attack O. Attack O is specifically a deauthentication attack. There are different types of attack that Air Replay uses, but we're going to do that. We're going to send 3 deauthentication packets. So it's going to send 3 commands to deauthenticate. And then we're going to put in the MAC address of the access point. That's what the A stands for there. So I did this before. Here is our access point. The text C stands for the client. That's the client device. And then again, we're putting WLAN 0 for the interface. So we're going to head and hit enter. And you can see now it's sending those. We see some lost frames here. So those frames were dropped because the client device disconnected from the access point. And look what we got here. There's the name of the wireless network. Please don't hack me. Sorry, I think we might. All right, so we're going to go ahead and stop that one. So now we know the name of that wireless network. Shows you it's very easy to get around someone not broadcasting that name. It's not a very secure method for someone who's actually has any type of experience doing this kind of work, but it's probably good for most people. Keep people away from your Wi-Fi. So now we're going to go and try and get the password of that wireless network. So we're going to be using pretty much the same tools. We're going to be running arrow dump again. And let's just use the same command we were using before. So we're specifically running it against this access point again. I actually don't see the client. Let's really quick make sure we're still connected. I think that the authentication attack worked too well because client didn't connect again. There we are. Okay, client's back. And we're going to do this again. We are going to send the authentication frames back again so we can get the client to disconnect in the hopes that when it reconnects, we can capture something called the WPA handshake. Now, what that handshake is the agreement between a client device and the Wi-Fi router basically authenticates it. And during that agreement, we can kind of capture some really important information there, that the handshake being one of the important pieces of information there. So we're going to run the authentication. Awesome. Now let's look at this monitor again. And we can see up here, WPA handshake for the MAC address of the wireless router. So that is very good. Let's go ahead and stop that monitor there. And we're going to go over to something called AirCrackNG. So what this does is it takes your file that you just created, which includes the WPA handshake, and it will run it against something called a password list. So there's this very popular password list called RockYou. It's basically a text file. It's got 14 million passwords that have been collected by hackers over a number of years. This is open on GitHub. You can go and download it. It's, you know, it's not illegal or anything. It's just a list of passwords commonly used in this type of attack and for penetration testers to try and get the password from a captured WPA handshake. So I already have command here. So TechW stands for the word list. We have the name, rockyou.txt. I'm going to have to actually just change the location because this is a certain directory that I'm not in right now. So let's go ahead and pull that out. TechB stands for the BSS ID. That's the MAC address again. And then this is the WPA handshake that we captured. Let's go ahead and run that. So you can see right now that it is running all of these possible passwords against that handshake to see if anything clicks. You can see there's the 14 million possible passwords that it's going to run through and see if it hits on any of them. We're seeing it test about 4,000 different passwords every second. This will show you the time left that it'll take to process all 14 million passwords if you have to go that far. And this is the percentage that, you know, of the full 14 million passwords. So look, we just found it within the first, what's that, 134,000 passwords checked. We found the password, less than 1% of the total list. That's how easy it is to get someone's Wi-Fi password. So that was WPA2. That's what most of us use at home. If you have a password that is something that's very common, not very unique, doesn't have a lot of special characters, you know, it maybe it's a family member's name or something like that, you can probably bet that it's going to be on that password list, which means that if anyone is close enough to your home that they're in range of your Wi-Fi, they can get on it. So if you are using WPA2, maybe you should double check your password, make sure it's unique enough, put in some extra special characters. I really recommend moving to WPA3. WPA3 doesn't use a pre-shared key like this, so you can't capture a WPA handshake like that. But you know, in the meantime, definitely check your passwords, make sure they are unique. And really quick, I want to go over what this password list looks like, just so you can see. You know, I'm not sure it's actually gonna open in there. Let me go ahead. I think I have it on my PC. Close out of the virtual machine. So this is the password list. It's got all of these commonly used passwords that people have used. You know, there's some even ones that you would think look pretty unique that, you know, people have used over the years. But there's 14 million of these passwords in here, and you could probably find ones that you've used before in here as well. I mean, look at this. Even this, you think that looks pretty unique. If that was, you had captured the WPA handshake on that network, then your password is going to be guessed by this machine. So that is all I have for my presentation. Are there any questions?
Wow. You made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, but then mission accomplished. Because
yes, this stuff makes me uncomfortable when it comes to cracking and all that and hacking. And that's why I said it before. I can't watch those shows that have that on there. It makes me uncomfortable. It's like they're teaching everybody how to do it on the show.
I mean, there are plenty of people out there that can Google this and you know, get the same information I just gave you here. So this device that I'm using, I think, was about $50 on Amazon. But, you know, it really shows the importance of having those good, unique passwords and then also eventually moving to the latest encryption method, which is WPA3.
Yeah, WPA3, exactly.
Yep. Anybody have any questions?
And I've been telling my students the same thing. So if it's WPA3, take it.
Worry
about what it does, and you can't use anything anymore. Just take it. Just use it, because otherwise you need to use 16 characters. Not 16 mm-hmm. characters. You should use something maybe 16, whatever, long, and use characters, numbers, you know, caps and
make it unique.
Everything.
You know?
Just make it unique, and everything you can find that's on your keyboard, use it.
Yeah.
And mix it up really good. Because my son actually tried that, and he was going through it and checking to see the possibility of, you know, hacking on those. It was something that he went on like that. And he tried it, which is, you know, a pretty one that I kind of use around the house. And he's like, Mom, that one's really hackable. I'm like, yeah, but that's the one we kind of use for everything, right? And he's like, yeah, we shouldn't do that. I'm like, okay, well, then he did it again, but he added some characters and some numbers to it. And it went to like, I don't know, millions of different variations and can't get hacked. It really makes a difference to add those special characters and,
absolutely.
And numbers and capitals and stuff. I mean, even if it's just a sentence that you're coming up with, use characters and numbers and letters to do that. It really makes a difference. It really does.
It does. And I'll say that, you know, a lot of new, you know, Wi-Fi routers, they'll have the capability for WPA3. But they don't necessarily default to that when you're creating a network. So you do have to, you know, go in there and manually change that to make sure that you're getting that. But there's also something to keep in mind is that if you have any devices that you connect to your network that are maybe a little bit older and they don't speak the language of WPA3, well, then they're going to connect in a compatibility mode, which brings it down to a WPA2 level. So, for example, I have this this robot vacuum, It's probably about 5 or 6 years old, but it doesn't understand WPA3. So when I connected it to my network, which I thought was safe because it's WPA3, it actually made the network more vulnerable and subject to that same type of attack that I just showed.
Yep, they can get through there.
Yep.
And I have the same thing with a printer that I have. It goes off at 3 o'clock every day. And my printer reset itself on at 3 o'clock every day. It's really funny. Somebody's getting on the computer at 3 o'clock every day, and it goes through.
Printers are some of the worst as far as making your networks vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just seeing some of these questions here. Does a VPN help avoid this? Nope, VPN will not make a difference at all. Your network is essentially public facing. You know, it's always broadcasting out. So, you know, a VPN wouldn't change that. Something that you can do is, you know, make sure that your Wi-Fi broadcast is not going too far outside of your local area. You know, we want it to cover our whole house, right? But we don't necessarily want it to be reachable at a neighbor's house. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, Brandon makes a good point right there too.
Yep, absolutely. You know, we want to make it simple for us to get on something like our Wi-Fi and to share it with friends and family, right? But doing that makes you very, very vulnerable to anyone with just a bit of knowledge of this kind of stuff. Let's see, enable device notification, any device accessing network. It notifies you. Yep, that's a very good idea. I do that with my Google Wi-Fi. I just get a notification on my phone for any new connected device. So, you know, if I'm not expecting something to be connecting and I see a notification, I know that's a big problem. So, yeah, Shrikant, that's a very good point.
I always know when my kids are getting on. I always know.
Yep. People should really be aware of what's connected to their device at any given time, and just I'm kind of paranoid, so I check it, you know, regularly just to see what's going on. But that's a good point, Shrikant.
That's the way to be. You really have to. Yep. I mean, you wouldn't think it would happen because you're not anybody really special. You're not, you know, a CEO of a corporation or something with a lot of money or whatever. But it happens. It could be the kid next door just trying it out for his own fun.
Exactly.
You know, and then that's it. It's gone. And he figures out how to get in your bank and everything else. Money's money. And, you know, the fun is fun, right? Hacking is fun. Being on that side, I guess that's what they like to do. That's what they want to learn.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, and, that was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Roy.
Okay. I will keep mine lighter, or I'll try.
Can you bring me out of the slump of fear that I'm sitting in right now? No, it's not that bad.
Everybody see my screen? Or, no, one second.
I see it now.
Okay. So, I'll be talking about the future of Microsoft Stream. Because it needs to be changed. It's right now in the point of changing.
I greatly appreciate this one.
Yes. So the first thing, it was originally created as a standalone app and to replace the old video portal, and it was modeled after YouTube. The reason why it was modeled after YouTube is, I don't know about you, but I remember in middle school, every single day after school, I would be on YouTube. That was my first thing. I wouldn't go to homework. I would just remember it's just for the common man, and it's easy to use. That's the whole entire point why it started. Now, this is on only Microsoft Stream Classic. This is, if you go on to the Classic, this is what you're going to see on your page. They didn't get the whole picture, but pretty much you get the AHA, Docs Corner, and the two trending videos. Now, there's pros and cons. Now, the records video and audio is a pro and con. And I can talk about it for hours. I'll just say it's editing stuff. adding stuff, you gotta get it. It's hard to do it with video and audio. Now, the thing that if I'm pretty sure you've all seen is that it's you can interact. The audience is able to interact. It automatically uploads videos. Captions can be edited and details can be added. This is actually really important. This is actually really helpful. But then you got the cons where you can't show to an outside organization, and it's hard to even external share inside the actual, like, inside the actual company. Like, not even to, like, just to a different department. And you can't stream a video and can't search issues. Like, I mean, the search button, if you search, you can't find anything. There's issues with the search function, the search bar. Okay, and it's getting discontinued February 15th, 2024. And this is actually stuff you can actually do on the new one, stream on SharePoint. Just a little thing I did. And this is how stream looks like. This is how it's on stream on SharePoint. And if you ever want to, there's up at the top, there's a click here button to get to the classic. And it's available to use, and the same main functions do exist on it, so you're still able to use it very easily. There isn't any issues in the usage of it, in a sense. Now, the main features are videos automatically uploaded. It organizes the content for you on SharePoint. Anyone can create videos, which is not possible actually in Classic, which is actually very interesting. You need to allow people to make videos in Classic by whoever's in charge of the groups that are created, and it's easily shareable actually, which is nice. Now, I found a few issues when I was messing around with it. So my computer, I have a camera that I connect through USB. It does not read that camera, but it does read the microphone on that camera itself. And if you remember, this compared to the Classic is very bland, because the Classic is this. And that's bland. And there isn't much to really find anything. And I'm not saying that it's going to stay like that, but they haven't finished making it. And the way it looks like, they haven't finished making it, which is an actual issue. If they are saying that it's going to be discontinued, then you still need to finish all the process of actually making it work efficiently and correctly. So these are the differences between Classic and SharePoint. So with the captions, it's actually very important that you can edit them, because all of us have accents. Doesn't matter if you can hear it or not, but I'm from Boston and we don't pronounce our R's. Just don't pronounce it, so somebody who's hard of hearing or deaf won't be able to maybe not understand the whole entire presentation being done. Now, the main difference in this is that where it uploads. As soon as you record something, like you record a meeting, like our team meetings, so currently they will automatically go on stream. No questions asked, they go on Microsoft Stream, no issues. But when it changes on the SharePoint, it's actually given to the organizer of the meeting before they can actually upload it for the whole entire team. So they'll have it in their OneDrive or SharePoint, for depending on what they want, and it's not readily available right after. So, and then there comes, of course, editing issues, because editing is a pain no matter what it is. Then just to edit the video, you need Stream Studio, and I downloaded Stream Studio, try to mess around with the video, a quick video, and didn't let me do much even. And of course, it's not interactive. While Classic, you actually supports quizzes within the video if you ever want to just throw that in for fun, or of course see how people are actually paying attention. And it actually does create a few issues that I've seen in between each other. Now, The thing is, I could not even research a lot about migrations. All it gave me was SharePoint Global Admins can actually do it. I couldn't find anything else. And if it's not migrated in time, everything on it will be deleted, which I know we don't like. But it will keep the video name, description, and a short snippet. It will give you all the video if it's migrated. But it doesn't. But if there's any extra information, it will completely disappear. Now, does anybody know why do you need to do this type of research? Anybody can answer. No? So the reason why you need to do this is if you don't do it, things will actually break. I decided to do this because I worked for a company who wanted to change ERP systems, but had no idea how to actually go about it and migrate the information. And just to explain to you, I stopped them from doing that because it was a metal training company and we had $5 billion of material, which, think about it, and times that by two, that's pretty much how much $5 billion is in metal. And they just said they wanted to do everything by hand, which was going to be impossible for us to do. And this is the type of reason, and it doesn't matter if you have to change it in this case or your company wants to change it. You got to do the research of the pros and cons of what you have, what you actually need, and is there any easy way to move it? Because if you don't do that, then things are going to break. Nothing's going to work. It's going to be a headache for everybody, and it's an actual issue that does occur. In this case, it's easier because you're forced to move everything, and there's no question about it, but you got to make sure that things are actually compatible to be moved around. If not, then nobody's going to actually want to do it, even if they have to. It's going to still cause issues. Any questions?
So we should probably start moving everything. How is this going to make a difference with our... Oh, man, I got so many questions. We should probably start moving everything over now, right? Migrating it over.
Yes. Right now is actually the time to migrate it over because you will actually be able to migrate it over. Because as soon as it hits that stop mark, it's over. Right. You can't migrate anything.
So will it keep the descriptions that are written in there?
Some descriptions it's going to keep, some it's not. That's the main issue.
Right. And we don't know yet.
And it didn't tell me how to migrate. All it said is you're going to be able to migrate it, but it all depends on who is the global admin.
It did show up for me. Because I have global admin, which means there's going to be a lot of work coming forward, but it shouldn't be too hard to migrate over. I think the thing is that we have all those department streams in Teams, you know, in the channels, and I'm wondering how, you know, that's going to make a difference. All of those are not going to work.
Yeah, and same thing, there's the big difference of how it looks like. Like, this is completely different than what this is.
Yeah, this is easier to find what you're looking for. This new one is so plain and empty. But I'm sure in the department itself.
Well, again, I'm not sure. It could be that they're still working on it, as they say. But
yeah, how it's going to be listed and everything. I just wonder.
But again, when I searched for stuff in the classic, I couldn't find anything. If you search for it, I couldn't find it. I don't know why, but there's the search function that search bar just doesn't work correctly. There's something going on with it, and it's also with the actual new one.
Right. So does that
there's a lot of issues.
All the videos that we have of all the meetings that we have and everything, does that mean we have to move all of that over to SharePoint? I mean, yes. Even from like past web design.
Make sure it's all migrated.
Department. Yeah. All right.
No matter what, this research has to be done for everything. And no matter what, if it for an actual company or doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
This type of research needs to be done.
That's for sure. Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, all right.
It was a bit lighter.
Now I'm in another slump. That's all right. I need to know about this one too. So
it's piling up.
It's piling up, Landon. What are we gonna do? All right. So this one should be better. This one's Project Breaker, which is always fun. I want to see, and it's about a game, so that should be more fun. Andrew, are you all ready? Thank you, Ryan. That was really good. It was very good. Thank you for the information.
I am terrified, and I'm currently trying to open the code for it, but it is not working. I have the Brick Breaker open, thankfully, and I didn't realize that, but it has the code right there. Wow.
There you go.
I was worrying about it the whole time. Okay, how do I share my screen?
So, click the share that's next to the leave button.
You are. Okay, so... Wait a minute.
And if you're going to use sound, check, you know, click that include computer sound.
I will not. Yeah.
And then you can choose a screen, so that way you always use that screen.
Can you all see my screen?
Not yet. Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Now
we
can. Yep.
Okay, yes. Sweet. Hi, so this is what I've been working on. I have loads of tabs open down here because I had this all planned out. I'm not going to be going into presentation mode because I'm going to be switching through those tabs actively. So anyway, here we go. So the first thing is supposed to load up, and we're going to be covering what the Project Breaker is, how does it play, and how does it work, which are, of course, two separate questions. if it loads. So Project Breaker is a brick breaker game, and your goal is to break each of the bricks. And I'm also going to show you how it plays. There we go. So I'm using Unity, which I was a little bit intimidated at first. However, I found out that it uses C#, which this is the code for it. We're going to scenes, we'll go to global, and the whole point is press play and see if it works. Another quick little thing is that Unity, no matter what computer you use, will take forever to load. So I'll try to give an explanation while it's loading. The whole point of it is there's going to be a bunch of bricks. Some of them will be the same color, some of them will be different colors. And the point of it is to break them all like this. There you are. Okay, something's wrong with the camera. And once we do that, it will advance to level 2. And each part of this is programmed. So global is like the startup screen. Of course, I'm not done with it. But once global is done, which global doesn't have any bricks on it, if you noticed, once it is out of bricks, it will advance to level 1, which I could personalize however I want to, or level 2, which level 2 is a bit bigger, so I could show that each of these is going to take forever to load. Each of these can be moved however I want to, and I could put this there, and then I could play the game. Will not be able to start it on level 2, though, because how the code he has set up here, it relies on it running, starting in global. But what I will say is that each piece of this actually So we saw how it plays, and now we're going over how it works. So each piece of this, there are multiple pieces, which don't save that. You have your assets folder. This is what you create in the beginning. You create your scenes, which if we saw, scene one was the global, and then scene two was level one, scene three was level two. And once you're completed with one scene, it will go to the next scene. How that works is through the scripts. Each of these scripts, now I tried to open it in Visual it did open. That's awesome. So Game Manager is a code that, of course, uses the Unity engine. If you see, each of these has a code. I don't know if it will freeze up, so I'll try that afterwards and see what happens. But each of those parts are integrated into one. I'm going to minimize that. So each part of these, the camera is a code, the paddle is a code, the ball is a code, and then each of these bricks is a code. That's what the prefab is for, so I didn't have to, like, code this brick and then this brick and then this brick. The brick is like a preset code that you put in there, and you could duplicate it as many times as you want to. The sprites are just images that you can use to, like, for the paddle, for the ball, for the blocks. I use the instructional videos, and I plan on updating them later. I just felt proud, like, that now that I know how this works, I can kind of personalize it any way that I want to. The physics. So if you noticed, whenever the ball made contact with the paddle, it made an angle instead of just going straight off. That's from the bouncy, and that is also from a couple of the codes that I'm hoping to be able to pull up in the scripts. Here's the scripts, and the game manager will show, okay, there's a ball, there's paddle, there are bricks. Each of them are separate. It says that there's two levels. I could change that to as many as I want, and each level, so you have a score of zero, which I haven't displayed that yet. It's something that shows in the game manager, where every time that you hit a block, you get a little bit added to your score. I'm still going to add that later. And then you have three lives. If you run out of all three lives, you'll restart back from level one. So if you're on level two and you die, you'll go back to level one. Don't destroy on load was something that he used to make sure that the game does not crash on the start. That was actually the problem that I had at first, because the game manager, it basically puts the game manager onto the next level. So I didn't, like, if we see over here, global only has the game manager. If we go to level one, it doesn't have the game manager. Don't crash on load puts the game manager and transfers it from level to level. Start runs new game. And then, of course, new game runs. All right, your score is at zero. Your lives are at three. And it will load level one, which will load this level, it will load the earliest level. And then once you complete that, it will advance to the next one. Right there. The reason that the ball and the paddle and the bricks are used in the game manager not only shows their existence in the game, but it also shows their starting point. So if you notice, if I don't minimize this, no matter what, the paddle starts right there, the bricks start right there, and the ball starts right about there. The game manager runs that and it puts, like, a starting location. Okay, this brick is at this location, this paddle is at this location, and so on. If cleared, it loads level plus one, so that'd be level two. And it goes on. That's whenever all bricks are cleared. If the bricks are all gone, as long as the bricks are still there, return false. Once the bricks are all gone, it returns true and advance to the next level. And I can edit this code to add more or remove it if I want to. There's also, while there is code to it, there are also pieces, like if I were to go to the paddle, we can see little bits like this transform is its starting position on the y-axis. You might see that whenever it made contact to the ball, it didn't rotate, but that is because I restricted it from moving up and down. And having that as well as the rotation is zero made it stiff. Otherwise, without that limit, without keeping anything from moving up or down, it will rotate. So if it knocks the left side, that'll fall down and that'll fall up. The rigid body, that is its structure, and the box collider is its... Does anybody see that little white kind of box around the box? You'd faintly see it. Do you see it?
Yes.
So my volume is very down. It's saying that whenever the ball collides with that, it's going to deflect. And the same for each and every one of those bricks has a white box around it that whenever the ball collides with the brick, it's going to deflect off of it. And it will also damage it. And if we look in the bricks code, it also has the same code of the box collider. And there are some later level 2 commune. That even though if we saw, I'm going to try to finish this level real quick. And I'll show y'all what I mean. So we could sit and watch me lose. But in this case, cheaters do prosper. So we're just gonna, for the sake of time, this doesn't reflect on my ability, I promise. It kind of does. And it loads. So if you saw some of the other blocks in level 2, some of them were colored. And I'm waiting for it to load. And whenever we hit those bricks, it will... If it loads, the bricks, whenever it makes when the ball makes contact with the bricks, it will shift down a color. And there's no way to cancel that, is there? Okay, so we're going to wait for it to load, and I can hopefully explain it. So whenever, here we go. Go, and I... terrible at this. I remember there used to be like a mobile application. Here we go. So if I were to deflect off of these, you could also, if you saw it went from black to blue, you could change the background and personalize it the way you want to. If we go and we knock one of the other colors, if it goes back there, trick shot, we'll see that it goes from red to orange. And then if you hit it from orange, it will go to yellow, the green will go to blue, and then the blue will break. And those represent how many hits each of the bricks can take. And it's partially in a hit system, but it is not, or like a live system, but it isn't. So what it's going to do is it's going to say that it has, see, these are the different elements. And there's also like unbreakable. We could also set how many points each of these are to hit. But once it reaches, so whenever it's hit, it will go from brick red to brick orange. And if you see, the red one isn't there anymore. And then it'll go yellow. And then once it goes to yellow, it'll go to green and then to blue. And then it'll disappear. And then there was also like a gray brick that he had that you could totally make it unbreakable if you wanted to. But that is that. I'm going to try one thing real quickly. I know we're on a time frame. We'll try the battle. It works. Can I do the ball too? Oh, that is awesome. Okay. So, y'all can still see this? Hello?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. This is the paddle, which it uses the rigid body code and the vector 2 direction, which shows which direction it goes. This is the speed. If I were to change this number to, say, 70, say, 100, it'll go faster. And same with the max bounce angle. That is the maximum angle that it can bounce off. Otherwise, it'll just be going in a straight 45-degree angle. This resets the paddle, which it works with the game manager to reset it in its starting location. This, I don't know why he had me name an update. However, if you look, it says if input get key. Some gamers like to use WASD. Some like to use the arrow keys. If I press A or if I press left, that will move the vector to left. And if I use the right or the D arrow, it will move it right. Else, so if I'm not pressing anything, it's not going to move at all. And it also uses the ball's code, which we will look at. Some of these I had to put, I had to copy. If one code has it, the other code has it. And it's collision. Code. Lots of code. And when the ball collides with this object, it will collide and it will go off right here. Contact point, paddle position. Those are used. If you saw whenever the ball made contact with the paddle, if it hit in the middle, it went straight up. However, if it hit on the side of it, it went at a sharper angle. And that is what these are for. And this has to do with this, the size. This is the velocity. If you actually hit it on a certain part of it, like if you accidentally hit it on the side, it will slow it down. And originally, before I added any speed to it, it did slow down with every hit. And every piece of code contributes to what that game was that I was playing, where the speed was accounted for was how fast it was going, the ball colliding with the paddle, it won't break. However, the bricks, it will break. If it's red, it goes to orange, then to yellow, then green, blue, and then it's gone. That's the brick separate coding. The miss zone is each three of these have codes. This will be the last thing. Wall. If we hit wall 4, that is the miss zone, which will represent us losing a life. Otherwise, it will collide and it will bounce off. I had the video in case the code didn't work, but I'm glad that it did. And now, that is all. Are there any questions? I'm trying to find the team's thing. Here it is.
How long have you been working on that?
I have been working on that since... Where is... All right. Okay, there we go. I've been working on that since maybe week 2, and I finished it last week or the week before. I had an error that I was uncomfortable with. I was scared that it wasn't working right. Turns out I was just starting it up wrong. And in that time, I worked on something else. It took me 2 to 3 weeks. It was a 1-hour video. But there was also implementing things on the side that I could have changed in his code. Like I could have given myself more or less lives. I could have made the paddle bigger or smaller. I could have changed the sprites that were in it. I have not yet. But it has been quite an immersive experience. That was off of 2 weeks of work, which in that has been approximately 20 hours.
It's impressive. It looks like it would have been a lot longer than that. Good job.
Thank you.
Hey, Andrew, when the ball strikes the break, what happened in the code by then? Like, you delete those breaks or?
Whenever, are you asking what happens whenever the brick disappears?
Uh-huh.
Whenever it gets hit the last time?
Uh-huh. No, every time the ball is striking the brick, that brick get disappear, right?
Yes.
So is it like you deleting it or in the code or how are you managing that?
So what's happening is whenever it hits the red, it will go down the scale in color. Whenever it hits the blue block, it mm-hmm. never truly deletes it from the code. It rather hides it and lets the ball pass through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to make new CS scripts for the next level and the next level and the next level? Like, you know, you make the different levels, you make them harder and harder. So you have to make another script for those. How are you going to change those?
So what I do is I go to scenes. The only time I'll ever add another script is if I want to add another game mechanic or function. Like if I want to add something to the background, if I want to make them explode on contact, or, you know, whether it's a visual or a sound effect. If I'm using the paddle, the ball, the bricks, and the code that I already have, I could add as many scenes as I want to it, and I will not require any other scripts. The only thing that will require scripts is if I want to add another game element, so maybe a second paddle or a power-up or another ball. Updating the CS code will likely be adding game effects, whether it's sound or visuals. However, if I'm not changing or anything, and I'm just putting the bricks in a different pattern, I can make as many levels as I want to.
All right, so you could put in some of the gray ones, so it gets harder and harder, and they have to go around the gray.
They have to go around the gray, or they can hit the gray, but it wouldn't be able to break.
Right. Yeah. Or the ball goes really fast, and it just gets faster on each level.
Yes. That I'd have to add to the not add code, but I would have to update the code for the game manager of, like, maybe higher the level, add to the speed of the ball, or the paddle slower to increase the difficulty.
That makes sense. Yeah, because I remember that game could get really hard.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. It used to get really hard.
For sure.
Well, that's awesome. I love what you did. I love the colors. The colors are really, you know, straightforward. It's like, you know, education colors.
So thank you.
Easy on the eyes for the kids and stuff.
I don't want to take credit for that. It was the instructional video that gave me the sprites. However, it showed me how to implement my own sprites if I want to. So, like, I've got, maybe you could use Paint, and as long as it's a certain type of file and it's within a certain amount of pixels, then I can create and edit the bricks in any fashion that I want to.
Are you going to make them so that they break apart?
I want to update it. I hope to add visual effects. And then I thought about making like a thing where it's like both things that can enhance the experience, but also like lower it. So whether it's maybe power-ups to increase the amount of balls you have or the speed that you have, or if it is maybe like a debuff where it's like your paddle moves slower, or maybe the bricks have double life. I have a bunch of ideas that I could implement. That I'm excited to, and I'm hoping that I can get really far with it.
Like maybe the bricks will drop some special stuff. Get a little bit like Galaga, you know, and
Space
Invaders.
Oh, for sure.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's funny. No, that's really cool. Very cool. There's a lot you can do with that.
The cool thing is, even though it wasn't, I mean, yeah, it was. I might have showed the box colliding and all that stuff if I wanted to, like you said. I could update it to make it like Galaga, where I can I could just change the sprites and then I could add like a function to blast it. And if it comes in contact with it, it explodes or something like that. And in this Project Breaker, I learned how to also make more than just, you know, colliding games, like that whole box collision thing. I could totally make it to where instead of a brick, that's a wall. And instead of the paddle, that's a character moving up and down and left and right. Whenever he hits the wall, he can't move past that.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. But it's those games are just like Brick Breaker, getting those aliens.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a takeoff of that.
For sure.
I wish my kids would do something like this. Start making some games. Pay for their college. Okay, this is awesome. Thank you very much.
I play more games than I make, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, everybody did a great job. Are there any more questions for our presenters this evening? You did such a great job. Yeah, Tamara, the object of the game definitely is to clear the screen. And to try to get out without losing the least lives possible. Yeah. Yes, great presentations. That's really good. Well, thanks for everybody for coming. I always enjoy these, you know, even if I was in a slump at the beginning. I'm much better now, thank you, Andrew. I won't worry too much about the hacking or anything, so I'm okay.
Yeah, change your passwords, people.
Yes, just change your passwords. I think I'll go change a couple passwords now. Thanks, everybody. You did a great job. Definitely great job. So, can't wait for next week. We've got more coming next week. And don't forget to get yourself set up on those dates and get onto the file itself and set a date for yourself before you have to finish the course, because you're going to be fighting for space later on. So do it as soon as you can while we've got space. All right. Well, have a great night, everybody. And thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Have a good night, everyone.
Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
That was very enlightening.